The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Gloria, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. It's Friday, August the 13th. I've got laryngitis, but I'm here because Afghanistan is about to go under. Overnight, three major cities in western and southern Afghanistan fell to the Taliban. Lashkargah, the Helmand province capital. Kandahar, the country's second largest city. And Herat, the key city of the west. Only three major Afghan cities, Kabul, Jalalabad, and Mazar-i-Sharif, remain under government control, and one is under siege by the Taliban. With the collapse of both Lashkargah and the Kandahar, according to the New York Times, the Taliban now effectively controls southern Afghanistan, a powerful symbol of their resurgence. They don't need symbols. We have bugged out, and the Taliban rolled in. And most everywhere, the Afghan national forces are refusing to fight, and the American air power over the horizon air power is too late to help wherever they are under siege. U.S. troops are being deployed by the thousands to the Persian Gulf and Afghanistan to evacuate personnel from the embassy in Kabul. They are also moving the embassy to Bagram Air Force Base. And Afghans, according to the Wall Street Journal, tell of executions, forced marriages as the Taliban advances. It's like the coming of darkness. The U.S. actually begged the Taliban yesterday to spare its embassy in the coming fight for Kabul. That is exactly where we are 6 months into the Joe Biden administration. 6 months. This would not have happened under Donald Trump. There would have been a residual force of 2,500 American, 5,000 NATO troops, heavy air support, but we bugged out. Let me review for you. Anthony Blinken in June, Secretary of State before the House Armed Services Committee, cut number 17.
We only have 2 months before the DOD is completely out of Afghanistan, leaving these people behind. Is the department considering a process to get them out of country while these claims are being processed that I've been told could take up to a year or two possibly?
Two things quickly. We're considering every option, yes. Second, I don't think that the fact that our forces are withdrawing, one, we're not withdrawing, we're staying. The embassy is staying. Our programs are staying. We're working to make sure that other partners stay. We're building all of that up. And whatever happens in Afghanistan, if there is a significant deterioration in security, that could well happen. We've discussed this before. I don't think it's going to be something that happens from a Friday to a Monday.
It is, in fact, going to happen from this Friday to this Monday. It will be over. Kabul might have some pockets holding out. The country is falling. Now, that was in June. Joe Biden gave a press conference on July the 8th. Cut number 8.
Mr. President, some Vietnamese veterans see echoes of their experience in this withdrawal in Afghanistan. Do you see any parallels between this withdrawal and what happened in Vietnam with some people feeling...
None whatsoever. Zero. What you had is you had entire brigades breaking through the gates of our embassy. Six, if I'm not mistaken. The Taliban is not... the North Vietnamese Army. They're not remotely comparable in terms of capability. There's going to be no circumstance where you see people being lifted off the roof of a embassy of the United States from Afghanistan. It is not at all comparable.
That's because we are leaving the embassy and retreating to the Air Force Base. At the same press conference in July, 1 month ago, Joe Biden cut 9.
Come to fruition. So the question now is, where do they go from here? That the jury is still out. But the likelihood there's going to be the Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely.
Highly unlikely. 1 month ago. Ned Price, spokesperson at the State Department, yesterday. Cut two.
Ed Price is going to be giving the latest on the situation.
Our first responsibility has always been protecting the safety and the security of our citizens serving in Afghanistan and around the world. As we've said all along, the increased tempo of the Taliban military engagement and the resulting increase in violence and instability across Afghanistan is of grave concern. Our embassy in Kabul has been on ordered departure since April 27th, and we've been evaluating the security situation every day to determine how best to keep those serving at our embassy safe. This is what we do for every diplomatic post in a challenging...
We are down to keeping him safe. John Kirby, the admiral, former admiral, who's the Pentagon spokesperson, said this yesterday, cut one.
About 3,500 to 4,000 people.
So why is it... I'm unclear why... So it's 3,000 people who are going to HKIA right away in the coming days. And then you have another 3,500 who will be there on standby in case all for security. I'm unclear on what they're doing. I mean, if the 3,000 going to HKIA, it's like a couple of miles from the embassy to HKIA. What exactly are 3,000 people doing? Are they just there securing the airport then?
They'll be there to provide safety and secure movement of the reduction of civilian personnel out of the embassy to help facilitate their departure from the country, to also help with the process of moving special immigrant visa applicants out of the country, and to provide additional security at the airport. Again, we believe this is a prudent measure given the deteriorating security situation.
3,000 is a lot of people, though. I mean, can you give any better sense of, like, on a day-to-day, what are they doing? I mean, it sounds like they must be, that number of people, they must be responsible for getting people to the airport, and then actually, it almost sounds as if they're coming in and taking over security at the airport, if it's that size.
I wouldn't go that far, Courtney. The Turkish forces are still at the airport. The Turks are still in the lead of security at the airport. We already have some security forces, United States security forces at the airport, including some aviation elements. These 3,000 would be going to bolster that presence and to make sure that the airport is secure enough to facilitate the movement of all these people over the next couple of weeks. Again, this is about prudent preparation, and we want to make sure that we've got enough on hand to adapt to any contingencies. Your question about
the... Can't tell the truth. He's not lying. We're sending thousands and thousands of troops there to protect our embassy and American people. Try and get out the interpreters that Michael Waltz and others in Congress have been begging the United States to get out. But it is Saigon all over again. The Biden bug out is Saigon all over again. It will take another Reagan to repair the damage being done to American credibility as Afghanistan collapses and America runs away with the Biden bug out. Meanwhile, in other news, migrant border arrests in July surged to the highest levels in 21 years. The Border Patrol made about 200,000 arrests at the southern border in July, marking the busiest month for arrests in 21 years and a 12% increase over the previous month. You understand that they have effectively thrown open the border. Home prices jumped across the United States in the second quarter. The National Association of Realtors numbers show the supply of existing homes for sale can't keep up with demand. The home buying frenzy shows a sign of cooling over the past few months, but the median sales price was higher in the second quarter compared with a year ago for 182 of 183 metro areas tracked by the National Association of Realtors. Meanwhile, the FDA is going to allow boosters for certain immunocompromised people, but they have no booster policy for everyone else. Everybody's going to need a booster. Israel has already figured this out. And the Wall Street Journal has opined what I told you yesterday, that the FDA has simply got to wake up and tell people, go get your booster, authorize boosters everywhere, and get it done while there is capacity and size. The Pfizer vaccine, which I got, is less effective than the Moderna vaccine, but it will be more effective with a third dose. And we're going to get there. It's like the J&J pause, the FDA's infamous J&J pause, which stopped the momentum dead for the vaccination program. That stupid move is now being matched by additional stupid moves at the FDA. The CDC needs to get out of the mask business from K to 3, and the White House Chief of Staff, Ron Klain, has to begin to appear in front of the public. He knows this issue, and issue authoritative advice on how many people are hospitalized and how many have died, vaccinated and unvaccinated. It's the only metric that matters. Cases doesn't matter. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court has upheld the federal court's ordering of Indiana students to be vaccinated. And the United States Supreme Court struck down at least a portion of the New York eviction law. After the break, I'll read you my Washington Post new column on the California recall. Friday the 13th in August, the end of America's 20-year campaign in Kabul in disgrace. There'll be a Taliban flag over the embassy maybe by Monday. Stay tuned.
Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
If your home is California, you have very little time, America, to help California. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The California recall ballots are arriving in the mail this week. Voting will continue until September 14th. The last 3 days will allow in-person voting. I wrote a column for the Washington Post yesterday. Here's what it is. Most of California's recall election ballots are expected to reach voters by early next week. Absent a cliffhanger, the election should wrap up shortly after September 14th. Question one. Before the Golden States electorate, should Governor Gavin Newsom be recalled? Question 2 presents a list of 46 candidates who qualified for the ballot. If a majority of votes cast on question 1 are yes, then the leading vote getter among the 46 becomes governor, at least until the inauguration of whoever wins next year's gubernatorial election. There is a small chance that either former Republican Congressman Doug Ossie or Republican State Assemblyman Kevin Kiley could parlay a divided field into the smallest of pluralities. Doing so would take large, vast amounts of cash. It's not impossible. This is the rare case where a Mike Bloomberg, a Peter Thiel, or a Mark Zuckerberg could actually tilt an election. Perens, none has indicated plans to do so, but part of any such planned success would be stealth execution and until the moment of unveiling. Absent such an intervention, it has become a two-candidate race between former San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer and my longtime colleague and friend Larry Elder. Best known as a veteran radio talk show host, Elder is also a businessman, filmmaker, and author. Perens, disclosure. Elder's radio show is syndicated by Salem Media, which syndicates mine as well. Again, this is in the Washington Post. I must disclose that. You know that, but readers of the Washington Post column don't. Larry Elder is whip smart, has a gift for sharp rhetoric, and is a fellow University of Michigan Law School grad. My thinking right now is that if Donald Trump loudly endorses him, Elder would win the plurality of votes, but probably at the cost of Newsom surviving the recall. The former president is uniquely disliked in California. Trump is effectively Newsom's best ally. If Trump tries to elevate Elder, it would actually hurt Elder. If the former president stays quiet, Elder should win question two campaign and perhaps see Newsom lose question one. Falconer, the former mayor of San Diego, is as close to the middle of California's political spectrum as has been seen in decades. If this state has a silent majority for calm centrist politics, and let us all come and reason together thinking, or the old socially liberal fiscal conservative handle, Falconer owns it. That's a very big if, however. California tried buying tickets to that show with Arnold Schwarzenegger in 2003. Although the Terminator is still widely popular, the Schwarzenegger's Bear era's best day was the day he won. You cannot govern from the center in California. The special interests will crush you. That is a sad commentary on the state of this state. So many Golden State refugees love California. Large numbers of them received a great education from terrific public schools, or their children did. Still a staggering number of us fled, including me. For the first time in the history of the census, California lost population over 10 years. The economic reality is that if you don't have to make your life on the Pacific coast, you shouldn't. California is in the grip of a long unfolding triumph of special interests and wealthy elites, a stultifyingly dense collection of reality-denying ideologues. The state is living on its seed corn. making promises it cannot keep, especially to public employees whose retirement funds are woefully short of what's needed to meet pledged commitments. California is a land of worsening wildfires, chronic drought, deeply fractured communities, and growing radicalism on the left and right. Every city or town along the coast has smaller versions of the roughly 70,000 unhoused in the county and city of Los Angeles. California's once magnificent higher education system still has Nobel laureates and remains a leader in many fields of hard sciences, but liberal education is another story. Many faculties are so radical as to defy description in a dozen columns, yet anyone who follows the subject, even at a distance, won't argue the point. Woke is to this decade what the Jesus people were to the 70s in Orange County and rock and roll to L.A. in the 60s. Ubiquitous, breathtaking in their self-confidence and ambition. The issues were worsened by a pandemic as badly managed as it has been anywhere. Newsom is at the center of all these storms. In recent days, his happy demeanor has cracked as he snarled at reporters. Elder is the outsider, or Falconer is the competent moderate. Both seem preferable to the exponentially increasing dysfunction and conflict in this state. Vote yes on question one, California. Get Newsom out. Welcome back, America. That music means even on this day of gloom, when the Taliban are advancing on Kabul, August the 13th, Friday the 13th, will be the end of a 20-year loss of life and treasure in Afghanistan, I fear. Sonny Bunch is here to give us a little bit of levity, maybe a little bit of something to watch other than the collapse of Afghanistan. Sonny, please don't be recommending any of the Afghanistan movies today. That's just a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't really a ton of Afghanistan war movies, right? I mean, you have The Outpost, which is based on the Jake Tapper book, right? That's on Netflix, and kind of gets at I don't want to say the futility of it all, but it's not
the
exactly
daunting topography of war in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of I wouldn't say that's a bummer of a movie, because it does end on kind of a victory of sorts, but it is about the difficulty of fighting a war in which you don't have any real objective outside of just hanging around.
And then there was the Kite Runner, which is what we all hoped would come back.
Yeah, there's the Kite Runner, and then I guess. The Hurt Locker is Iraq.
I think the Hurt Locker is Iraq.
Yeah.
Yeah. IED disposal is the bomb squad is still, they work in both places.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. This is a bummer intro. I wasn't expecting a bummer intro. So,
well, now you've got to lift up the spirits of the audience. What can we want? By the way, have you been watching Ted Lasso season two?
I have been watching Ted Lasso season two.
They've roughed it up. They've taken it way down. I think they were too popular with evangelical Christians and traditional Catholics, so they decided to drive us away. I can't believe it.
I don't know if that's the case. I mean, I think it's I am still enjoying it. I don't know if it's quite. It's a slightly different show in the second season, because it's not like purely optimistic and upbeat. There you have kind of you have meme guy. Coach Led Tasso, right?
You've got a very dark turn to the Roy character. You got more F-bombs. Kurt Schlichter actually told me he's got too much profanity for him, and he swears like a sailor and a colonel. You've got a lot more sexuality. I could no longer recommend it for a family. And I think there's just a lot of, I think as though the writer's room, the showrunner, got too much positive feedback from people like me. He said, I don't want those people watching my show. I'll rough it up so much that Fetching Mrs. Hewitt won't watch it anymore.
I mean, there was a fair amount of cursing in the first season. Roy Kent has always been one with the F-bombs. I mean, I would say
not to 11 and 9-year-old girls, Sonny.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's kind of funny because it's unusual to see a footballer of that sort cursing at little girls instead of grown ups that he's usually around. But it's definitely I can understand what you're saying. I can see what you're saying.
All right, so now that Ted Lasso's been become an R-rated TV show, What do we watch? What's in the theaters?
Well, in theaters this week, you've got Free Guy, which is the new Ryan Reynolds kind of sci-fi action-adventure rom-com with emphasis on the comedy more than the rom. Basically, I'm trying to think of the easiest way to describe this. It's kind of like Ready Player One a little bit. It's like life in a video game. Ryan Reynolds plays a non-playable character in a video game. If you've ever played a video game and you're walking around the town of the video game, they're always the characters who, run the bank, right? That's what Ryan Reynolds does in this movie. That's what his character guy does. Or, the people who run the restaurants or whatever, the non-playable characters. He is one who gains sentience. He comes to life, and as he is going about his daily business, he falls in love with one of the actual characters, the people who actually play the game. And it's funny. It's definitely funny. It's cute. If you like Ryan Reynolds and kind of his goofy man-child mode, you will enjoy this movie. It is definitely not a dark, angry sort of thing. Like I guess the new season of Ted Lasso or the fall of Afghanistan. I don't know if you'll enjoy this. I think it might be. I'm not sure that it will play how it will play with audiences that are not super familiar with the world of video games.
That's what I saw. I've gone to see Mortal Kombat with my boys. I went and saw the G.I. Joe movie with my son-in-law, they're both different ages. They grew up with those things, and they didn't connect with me, but they connected with them. They thought they were hilarious because there were lots of jokes. I look at Free Guy and say, that's not my movie. I don't play video games. I've never played video games.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the sort of thing. Again, it is set in a very specific milieu, right? You have lots of jokes about Twitch streamers. Do you even know what a Twitch streamer is?
No, I don't. Nope.
Yeah, they have these cutaways to people who are talking on YouTube, right, about the video game, and they serve the same purpose that a talking head on like a CNN or something would serve, right, in a different sort of movie. It's not like you have to have super intimate knowledge of all of these different groups and cliques. You just have to kind of understand it's a different world and a different mode of, going through life. Look, here's the thing. I really, it's not my world either. I'm not a gamer. I'm not a 20-something who watches YouTube videos of people playing video games, right? That is not my world. But I did really enjoy this movie, actually. Ryan Reynolds is very funny. Jodie Comer, who plays the player who he falls in love with and who, like, wakes him, from the slumber of the non-playable character world, is very, very cute and attractive. They're both very good together. It's a solid rom-com. I don't think it's a great movie, but it is fun, and it is funny. It is lighthearted. I think people will enjoy it.
Can we go back 2 weeks? I want to praise you with great praise.
Oh.
Pig was magnificent. And I took the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, and we talked about it for hours. Then I sent my buddies in Arizona, Steve and Danny, to see it, and they loved it. I compared Danny, a big guy in politics, to Edgar. But I just thought it was terrific on so many levels. I'm still thinking about it. You're right. Nicolas Cage will be nominated for an Oscar. It's an amazing performance, actually.
It is. It's very good, and we'll see if he gets nominated for an Oscar. I'm still not 100% sold on that, just because it's come out a little bit earlier than a lot of Oscar-nominated performances come out. It's on VOD now if people want to go see it. If it wasn't playing in a theater near you, it's on VOD. You can, I think it's $10 or $20 or something like that. It's on video on demand. People can see it now. But it is very good and very, it's adults without being, dark and,
oh, it's
and,
not dark. It's dark, but it's not art. Let me tell you what I thought about it, Sonny, and then let's move on. I thought that it explains the food world to people who don't live there like me, but who believe it's pretentious like me, but at the same time to make me believe there's an authentic food world, which is run by people who power it out of genuine passion. So I now have some sympathy for it that I never had before, while they reaffirm that world's pretension and absurdity to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, the great thing about Nicolas Cage's character in this is that he is both great and a little bit pretentious. There is something pretentious about, you know, his chef who believes in, you know, memory, sense memory and all that stuff. But he's exceptionally good at what he does, and he believes in community more than anything else. That's what the movie is about. It's about community, and it's about the communion one gets from food, and it's about the making people's lives better through labor, essentially. I mean, it's really interesting and very good and down to earth. I highly recommend it to people. Slightly less down to earth is the documentary Val, which is about Val Kilmer. It's streaming on Amazon.
Oh, I saw this advertised. Right, interesting. Yeah. What'd you think?
Yeah. So the draw to Val is that Val Kilmer was an early adopter of camcorders, right? He had a camcorder at a very young age. He had like an 8mm film, you know, camera at a very young age. When he went off to New York to go to Juilliard, which is how he got us started acting, he took a camcorder. He had a VHS camera on set through a bunch of the movies he made, you know, as he came up, Top Gun, you know, all the way through, I don't know, Island of Dr. Moreau. We get really good footage from that. So that's the draw to this movie. So you get a lot of, like, interesting behind-the-scenes footage. If you've ever wanted to see huge fat Marlon Brando on the set of Island Dr. Moreau, this is the movie for you. I think that more interesting than that is kind of the current state of Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer, of course, was kind of a Hollywood icon and an idol, and now he has had throat cancer and he can't really act anymore. He can barely talk. I mean, he has to close, you know, a stoma in his throat to talk, and he has the kind of raspy squawk that anybody who, you know, has suffered this has. So he can't really act anymore. And he, you know, has been reduced to going around the country to conventions and festivals and stuff, signing autographs. And he, you know, he talks about how that is a little bit of a bummer. But what's most interesting to me is because he was an early adopter, he has a lot of footage of his family. He has a lot of footage of his, you know, kids growing up and his mom, at a younger age, and his dad and stuff. And we see that in the movie. And what is interesting about this to me is that it really is a representation of how we all live now. Like, we all have footage of our kids all the time. We could all look up, you know, if you are my age and you have kids who are 4 or 5, I can go back and look through essentially their whole life, right? On my phone, I can just pull it up and look it up. And it's less about the stardom for me and about the fact that he is kind of a representation now of what we will all be as we get older and kind of more melancholy or more whimsome and thinking about the past. He represents our future in a way, which is kind of a weird and strange way to think about Val Kilmer, who, again, is like kind of a famously mercurial personality who, you know, had a lot of troubled productions. The whole Batman thing didn't really work out for him. But it's the sort of movie that you watch it and you don't expect to empathize with the person in it necessarily. But if you go into it with an open mind, you totally will. I mean, it's really good.
Thank you for that recommendation. That's a good recommendation. And we will talk again next week. Sonny Bunch on Twitter and across the movie aisle. Time for ReliefFactor.com. Did my 6 miles yesterday. The reason I got laryngitis is I went from the East Coast to the West Coast. I mean, from the West Coast to the East Coast. And the allergies got me. You can hear it. But ReliefFactor.com also got me out there. I can't stop running in the Beltway humidity, and it always does this, but by carrying curcumin, resveratrol, and omega. 4 natural supplements that reduce the minor aches and pains that accompany exercise and aging. You're definitely doing the latter. You should be doing the former. Tonight you'll be watching the Browns crush the Jaguars. Sorry, Karch Meyer. But the Browns are good this year. And Even though I think you're going to surprise, you're not going to surprise Stefanski. Stay tuned, America. Go get your relief factor. Joined now by Tarzana Joe, the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hello, Joe.
Hello, you. This week's poem is about money. The Senate's spending trillions, but the House would like some more. They want it to be five, but they could compromise at four. Soon they'll reach agreement, but Joe's signature won't end it. For once they've gone and passed it, it will be a job to spend it. For if you stack them one by one, because dollars aren't so thinnish, forget it. It's a job that you would never, ever finish. I've done the mathematics for my number-challenged peers, assuming they spend evenly across the next 4 years. Let's say it's just $4 trillion. Then they'll have to find a way to pay out $2.7 billion each and every day. In the D.C. universe, who needs a superpower to drop $100 million each and every hour? To act with such audacity, I give them my respects. But no one has the stamina to write out all those checks. And like the seeds from cottonwoods when summer winds are blowing, no one has the auditors to track where it's all going. Margaret Thatcher said it, and I used to think it funny. The government could reach the end of other people's money. Budgets kept increasing, and the government survived. But the day that she envisioned, I think, sadly has arrived. So welcome to the Green New Deal, inflation that's unending, all brought to you in the disguise of infrastructure spending. That's Schumer's Trillions by Tarzana Joe.
Joe, that is brilliant.
Why, thank you. It's always nice to have a welcoming thought in the morning.
Well, I did do that. Well, it's like did you guys see the Dodger sliding into home base?
That was lovely, yes.
It was a perfect slide, right? So that was a perfect poem.
Wow.
Perfect poem means timeliness, funny, rhyme, no stretches, right? You didn't make up any words.
No stretch.
And it will be posted at tarzanajoe.com.
But of course.
And like the sliding tray, you'll stand up and walk off like you do it every day, right?
I've slid into second. I was put in as a pinch runner once in Little League, and I slid into second base trying to steal. And there was this, my wretched baseball field had a big hole in front of second base. And I hit the hole, stood up straight, about a foot from the base, and got tagged out. It was a horrible play, and I remember it to this day.
Too bad, Dwayne, when the umpire already called you safe. I mean, honestly, can't see a thing. So will that be posted at TarzanaJoe.com?
Yes, it will.
And are you accepting commissions at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com? Email TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com?
Yes, I am.
For all the weddings that are now happening that did not happen for a year and a half?
Yes, I actually got an email yesterday. We're back on for September. Where's the poem?
Get the poem. Tarzana Joe, thank you, my friend. Well done.
Thank you, sir.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt. I've got laryngitis, but luckily I've got Len Kordakovsky. Message from Len on Twitter. Len, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Thanks so much for having me back, Hugh. I'm sorry to hear about your laryngitis and the world falling apart, but you know, we'll try our best to keep it together.
I figured I could just turn the platform over and have you tell people about this magnificent trip you and Victoria Coates organized for many Iranians to visit Israel, and then I'll come in at the end, but take the center stage and tell people about it. It lifted my spirits.
Oh, well, thanks for the opportunity. Well, first of all, I do want to point to a couple of optimistic things in spite of what's going on in Afghanistan and with CDC. Number one, it's a year ago that the Abraham Accords were signed by a number of visionary people like Donald Trump, MBZ, King Hamad, and the Middle East has been changed forever. And I think that's great news for people in the Middle East and people around the world. Number two, I have to share this because it's a big day in the Khodorkovsky household, and it's our 40th anniversary year.
Oh, congratulations. 40 years today, you landed in America?
That's right, exactly. 40 years to the day that we stepped foot at JFK and won the lottery. I mean, we could not be more thankful to this land of liberty, and my kids have benefited from us being able to come here from the Soviet Union to the greatest country in the world.
Thank God for the greedy KGB guy who wanted your apartment. That's all I get. People will have to hear that story another time, but I'll never forget it.
Well, thanks, Hugh. Yes, thank God. And finally, as you mentioned, this other optimistic note that a couple of weeks ago, a number of us, the Trump administration, myself, Victoria Coates, Eli Kohanim, we brought a group of Iranian dissidents to Israel. Now, you would think that's kind of counterintuitive. Is there a more combustible relationship in the world now than between Israel and Iran? But as you know, a couple of months ago, Victoria and I wrote an op-ed calling for an Abraham Accord-style Cyrus Accords between the people of Israel and between the Iranian people. That's based on 2,500 years of friendship, actually, going back to the Persian king Cyrus the Great, who liberated the Jews from Babylon and allowed them to come to Jerusalem and rebuild their temple. So we wanted to rekindle those actually true authentic ties in the face of the last 40 years of the Iranian regime hijacking this history from both peoples. And we took a group of Iranian dissidents and we brought them to Jerusalem. They went to see the city of David, the old city. They went to the Western Wall. They went to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial. They went to the Syrian, Lebanese, and Gaza borders to see exactly what Iranian-sponsored terrorist groups are doing on behalf of the Iranian regime. And it was an eye-opening experience for many of them. It was the first time they came to Israel. There were a couple of political prisoners in the group. And their message was essentially that, they're both the people of Israel and people of Iran are the victims of the regime in Iran that hijacked that beautiful country 42 years ago. And secondly, they wanted to start taking steps, concrete steps, in rekindling those bonds that go back a couple of millennia and start working toward the day when the world's top terrorist regime is on the ash heap of history and the two people can rekindle their ties through Cyrus Accords and move forward in peace and prosperity, just like Israel is doing with its Arab neighbors right now.
Now, Leonard, our mutual friend Dennis Prager likes to say clarity before aggrievement. The Iranian regime gave us clarity this week with the new killer president appointing the interior ministry, a man wanted by Interpol because of the bombing in Argentina of the Jewish center decades ago. There is no more hardline, softline. It's just very obvious. These are killers. Why would we ever do a JCP 2.0 with these people?
We shouldn't, and we shouldn't have done JCPOA 1.0, and we shouldn't do JCPOA 2.0. It's actually not even the same deal anymore. It's a much worse deal. The reports we're hearing from Vienna is that the Biden administration has been conceding and conceding over and over in the face of greater and greater provocation from the regime. The more tankers they hijack, the more rockets they fire, the more concessions the Biden administration seems to be making. It makes no sense for the American national security or for the people in the region, our allies who are on the front line of this despotic terrorist regime.
When you arrived here 40 years ago, Reagan was already in the saddle. Jimmy Carter was gone. We need another Reagan, Len.
Well, I listen, Reagan will always be my first American president. And I do tell the story that how much Reagan actually meant to dissidents of the Soviet Union when Natan Sharansky, one of the most prominent dissidents, who was, you know, in solitary confinement in prison because he bucked the communist system, needed help to stay strong in prison. He pointed to Ronald Reagan's steadfastness and some other folks who made it clear that, you know, who the good guys are and who the bad guys are.
And we need more of that every day. Len, you're one of the good guys. Find him on Twitter at Message from Len. Pray for a Reagan. I'll talk to you. Len, Larry R. next.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.